All right. My name is Anwar Naseem, and I'm a professor of agriculture economics here at McGill. And I'll be co-chairing this session with Jean-Paul. And the title of the session is Investments Needed in Agriculture. And for those of you who actually attended the public lecture, a point of emphasis that came up was, you know, we need to increase the amount of agriculture investment, and there were a number of speakers indicated the low investments that have occurred in the last decade or so. So, and that is one reason why we had the food crisis last year. So we'd like to get the perspective of different foundations and multilateral institutions to see what type of investment their organizations are doing in agriculture, and perhaps other perspective that they might have to offer. So our first speaker is Marco Ferroni from the Syngenta Foundation for Sustainable Agriculture. Dr. Ferroni joined the Syngenta Foundation as its executive director in 2008. Before joining the foundation, Dr. Ferroni worked at the Inter-American Development Bank and the World Bank. At IDB, he was the deputy manager of the Sustainable Development Department. And at the World Bank, he was the principal officer in the bank's Office of Evaluation and Oversight, as well as a senior advisor. Earlier in his career, he was an economist in the government of Switzerland, working in development cooperation. Dr. Ferroni holds a doctoral degree in agriculture economics from Cornell University and is an expert in international agriculture and sustainability issues. So with that, I'll ask Dr. Ferroni to come up.
Thank you very much, Anwar, and let me start just because I haven't had a chance to say this in public, that I want to congratulate Dean Madramoto and his team on this conference now in its second year, as I understand, as the world and potentially the donors seem to be rediscovering what they should have never forgotten, which is agriculture. I think that the kind of event that we're having here can be seminal and very important in as much as events of this kind facilitate learning by the professional community engaged in food security and agriculture, as well as the broader public, and learning is what this is all about. I am going to be trying to be brief. I have a little list here which summarizes what I want to say. So when we're talking about investment in agriculture and to benefit food security, this is what I think we need to do: address world food performance gaps, be clear about the priorities, focus on smallholders, provide public goods, bring in the private sector, think value chain. In R&D, do not forget the D, which is product introduction, place extension, agricultural extension, front and center, and develop risk hedging tools. So address world food performance gaps. I do want to, you can read the dots yourself, but I do want to point your attention to this graph. We are facing a situation in which for about 20 years now, since sometime in the 1980s, average grain yields in the world have been, the growth of grain yields has been declining. It's still growing, but the growth rate is now down, as you can see at the end of the straight line in this graph, to about 1.3%, which is pretty much the same as world population growth. And what this means, ladies and gentlemen, is that we're growing enough in terms of the food supply to meet population, to meet that part of demand that comes from population growth, but we're not growing enough in order to accommodate income growth-induced additions to demand. And we're also not growing enough to have cushions in there to accommodate, for example, supply shocks, weather-induced, drought-induced, and what have you. So because world cereal yield growth, if you plot the FAO data, which is what we have done here, year on year, you don't see any trend because it goes all over the place, and for all of the reasons that we know, agriculture is a risky business, and the weather is an important factor affecting grain yields from and changes therein from one year to the next. But if you calculate, as we've done here, 5-year moving averages, then you're seeing a very important situation that clearly the world needs to address. And if I can just link this particular graph back to the food price crisis of the last two and some years, while there has been, of course, five or six important short-term factors about which some of which have been discussed and so on, and some about some of which there is controversy with respect to their marginal effect. This, ladies and gentlemen, is the long-term structural underlying reason why there is upward pressure on price. And so we better do something which is be clear about the task. And I'm saying this because when we talk about agriculture with different communities, even in the donor community, there is not necessarily agreement with respect to what needs to be done. Okay? I would like to propose to you that two things are what needs to be done, and everything else should be made to flow from that, whether it be the gender dimension, whether it be poverty reduction, and so on, should be made to flow from these two propositions, namely raise ag productivity in all four functions of agriculture, food, feed, fuel, and fiber, and use land and water sustainably. There's a great need to protect land. This is something that was not on the minds of those who framed, for example, the Green Revolution 40 and 50 years ago. This is a new issue now clearly on the table. And, of course, the implication of that second issue also is raise agricultural productivity. And this is the way to cope both with the supply side aspect of the food security challenge and with climate change issues as derived from land use change, which has something to do with agriculture. And by the way, the supply side issue or the supply side aspect of food security, of course, is not delinked from demand. In other words, food security, of course, the most important, or at least a key principle of food security, of course, is and has always been access. In other words, do people have the purchasing power to buy the food that they need? However, I'd like to remind us that the purchasing power of people is influenced by the price level. And if you have a declining production potential and scope for yield growth, then that will have an impact in terms of raising prices, thereby reducing real purchasing power. Focus on smallholders. There was a very good discussion in the last session, and I don't want to add anything, but I just want to say that smallholders, for now, are an asset that merits investment. There is this phenomenon that the literature calls the indirect relationship between farm size and productivity of land in labor-abundant, less developed countries. The relationship doesn't hold in Canada or in the OECD countries, according to the literature. But this means that smallholders are worth the investment. They're not a lost cause. But, of course, everything that was said in terms of differentiating the smallholder universe in the last panel applies in the sense that there are some smallholders that you cannot help as agriculturalists. They need different type of help. For example, income transfer programs. We've heard last night from the Brazilian representative about Bolsa Familia. We've heard from somebody who spoke from India about the National Employment Guarantee Scheme and so on. Those are very important vehicles for income support in rural areas, and they should go to the, you could call it, the poorest of the poor. So you do have to do, for example, if you plan a project in a specific setting, your analysis of the smallholder settings in order to choose a target group with which you can actually work as agriculturalists. Provide public goods, not too much needs to be said about this. Infrastructure, connectivity, education, healthcare, and so on. And all of these things, I'm not going to read this slide to you. When I say not too much needs to be said about it, it's not because it's not important. It's so important that we should just keep this in mind, and the fact is that sadly public policy often fails the small farmer. The private sector is indispensable. Governments are not going to be able to do that rural, that task of rural development and food security enhancement that we're all talking about. You do need the private sector, and you need in particular, obviously I'll be talking about the value chain in a minute, but let's focus in particular for a moment on the input industry, the crop science industry, the agricultural services industry. They are already spending billions on solutions such as technology, biotech, molecular genetics, and so on, crop protection, chemical solutions, and so on, to feed the world. They do reach today large numbers of small farmers, millions. But there are many, many more millions out there that are not reached. The private sector comes in many shapes and forms. We were talking yesterday about the small-scale Chinese traders that in Tanzanian villages that are there today. And then we also have, of course, the large multinationals. The private sector knows how to commercialize products, but it goes where there is a business case, and we need public goods, again, and partnerships to develop the smallholder market. And those partnerships have to be at the lower end of the market, clearly public-private, and with foundations and NGOs, and then at the higher end of the market, at the more commercial market end of the market, where there is more spontaneous ability to interact in commercial ways, private-private. Think value chain. This has been addressed in the previous panel, and there's not too much I need to think about. I need to say. I just perhaps can use the opportunity to say that in Syngenta Foundation for Sustainable Agriculture, our strategy basically can be summarized in three words: smallholders, productivity, and markets. And you need to think about the full value chain. It is necessary to link and come up with solutions that link smallholders to buyers for their potential produce, because they otherwise do not have an economic incentive to adopt improved technology. In R&D, do not forget the D. And the reason I'm saying is that there is plenty of public sector agricultural R&D that calls itself agricultural R&D, but basically stops at agricultural R. And all of this is fine and good. But in the end, you need the products, the seed, the fertilizer, the crop protection products, and so on, in the farmers' fields. And this is where PPPs come in. In addition to combining skills in science, they can come in and be very helpful in terms of bringing products to market. We must accelerate the transfer of improved crop varieties, for example, to the field of the smallholder. There are studies out there that show that it takes 25 years, which is a generation, for an improved variety, and has taken, to reach smallholders' fields. There are experts on this question in the room. They may be having their own views on this, but it takes a long time for crop breeding, for example, products to reach the small farmer. I'm not going to go into this particular partnership between Syngenta and CIMIT for lack of time, but I want to make a major pitch here with respect to something that has not yet been mentioned in this conference, and that is extension. Now, we looked at extension in India. We have our foundation a series of projects that we can talk about offline in India, and we worked with the Indian Ministry of Agriculture to launch and hold earlier this year a national conference on ag extension in India. And in the context of getting prepared for that particular event, this is what I found. There is a survey, NSSO 2006-2007, that looked at what are the sources of information of smallholders in India, information with respect to improved technology. And the most important source is the private sector, in other words, input dealers, directly or via progressive farmers. Government extension workers are appearing, as you can see in this slide, somewhere much further down. So what this means is that apparently there is already quite significant reach by the private sector into the smallholder community, and I'll be done almost, in fact, in 2 minutes. So here is two private sector business solutions that I'd like to propose for discussion when it comes to the question of agricultural extension. The first is input suppliers as sources of extension. The second one is buyers of produce as sources of extension. And, there's lots to be said. There are also potential concerns. They're being projected here for you to read, but I got to move on to my last point. Offer risk hedging tools This has been mentioned in the previous session, and in fact, even yesterday it was mentioned by somebody. The purpose here of this is my last slide is just to sort of inform you or project the notion that we have a crop insurance, a weather index-based crop insurance pilot in the field. It is a product that is in the field that works with UAP, a insurance company in Kenya, with reinsurance by Africa Re that actually insures smallholders for their investment in purchased inputs. So this is a very different approach to crop insurance than the ones that have been addressed earlier, which were approaches that were linked to agricultural credit. And we've heard from Jonathan Campaign that insurance linked to ag credit has issues. This one is an alternative approach that we can discuss if there is interest. Thank you very much.
Thank you.